Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
You never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you. I see your face in every flower, your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we're going to talk about the movie Twilight. But probably not the one you're expecting, although, you know, anybody who downloads a podcast is going to see the cover and maybe read some of the material, so it's not like you can surprise anybody.
This is not a trick.
Yeah, no. This is the 1998 movie directed by Robert Benton of Kramer vs. Kramer, Places in the Heart, and Billy Bathgate fame, and he also wrote The Ice Harvest, the script for the Superman movie, and Bonnie and Clyde.
I had forgotten that Gene Hackman was in Bonnie and Clyde.
I've never seen Bonnie and Clyde.
Interesting.
Well, I don't know. Is it worth seeing? I know it's iconic.
Yeah, it's definitely worth seeing. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, you know, the genesis of Warren Beatty is interesting. It's a beautiful movie. I think I saw like a restored version, and it's way more violent than you would expect for a movie of that time. At least I would, not being of that time.
Does it have reasonable pacing?
I don't remember being unsatisfied with the pacing, but it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Okay. Well, I won't hold it against you. This is going to be maybe for a bit our last two-man podcast. Yesterday, Brother Jay and I ended with the fever dream that is Wild at Heart.
Oh, nice. I suffered through watching that with Jason.
I thought I had seen it before, but it was clear when I started watching it that I had not seen it.
Maybe Jason and Paula.
Oh, that's very possible. I mean, I remember seeing the VHS tape, and I'm sure I saw probably the long-playing record album of the soundtrack at the old folks' home.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Our last scheduled two-man pod, and it started making me a little sad because I really look forward to the podcast that you put out with you and Jason because it's content that I have not heard before.
Well, yeah, actually, it's funny is that we're maybe disenfranchising two of our most faithful listeners, meaning you and Jason. Although Jason points out that now he, instead of having to scream at his car radio, he can instead just yell directly at one of us.
Perfect.
Brother Drew, why are we watching 1998's Twilight?
We are watching Twilight because this was a small, pretty small, especially for the cast, little movie that I remember seeing after it came out on video when I was living in Missouri. And I remember thinking, this is a really kind of simple detective noirish story, but the star power was incredible. And it wasn't even necessarily like all of the best performances, but just the charisma and magnetism that the movie stars inhabited in the story, I think really, really impressed me. And it was one of the first times I remember thinking, you know, there is a difference between like being a good actor and being a movie star. And sometimes it really shows.
Yeah, I agree. And this is a different kind of movie than the last one we watched, which was Heist, in that Heist was all about a heist, for lack of a better word, that was going on right at the moment. I mean, it was like it was a caper movie about a caper that was in progress. And this is a movie primarily about stuff that had gone on long ago. I mean, I had read that Paul Newman, you know, he had played a detective named Decker, I believe, Harper, maybe, in the 70s. And this was like basically the unofficial third Harper movie, like what Harper would have been like as an older guy. And that makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of in kind of fast Eddie Felsen mode from Color of Money. I actually really find it hard to believe that this movie was, 12 years after The Color of Money? Because Paul Newman still looked great.
Oh, yeah. No, pretty much what I was shocked about is, and what I mentioned to Brother Jay about this movie, was that if nothing else, simply for prurient reasons, pretty much everybody could find something to like about the couple, Liev Schreiber and Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Because if nothing else, those two are well-toned young actors.
Very young and very naked, especially Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, although briefly. I mean, which is fine. I'm not complaining. Because isn't she briefly, she's supposed to be... Yeah, noticeably.
Yeah, I noticed that. She was. They said she was 17 after showing her topless.
Yeah. Which,
but she was very well lit while she was nude. Unlike Susan Sarandon later in the movie, who probably was a body double anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. That's actually kind of appreciated. I mean, nothing against Miss Sarandon, who apparently spends a lot of time with her new ping pong playing pal. Now that she's divorced or separated or whatever. From Tim Robbins.
Yeah, right. I don't think they were ever married.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Apparently she's a keen interest in table tennis.
Yeah, she owns that club in New York, right?
Yeah, if not more than just that one, but yeah. Which is fine. I think that's a good thing to do with your wealth if you're wealthy. Didn't one of the Microsoft guys save the Pro Bowlers Association?
That's true. And Susan Sarandon in this movie was with very little screen time. I thought she was great.
Oh, yeah. No, she's a movie star. And, you know, that's the thing about this movie is that this, again, if you contrast it with Heist, it is a much slower paced movie. There's not a ton of action. The characters are not in their prime at all. All the characters are past their prime, except for, of course, Liev Schreiber and Reese Witherspoon. Who, good for everybody, pretty much aren't really main characters, although they do fine.
Yeah, should we just run down who's in this movie? We actually haven't spelled it out.
Oh yeah, yeah. Please,
we got the three main stars: Gene Hackman, Susan Sarandon, and Paul Newman. And then there's an amazing supporting cast, including. A very young Reese Witherspoon and Liev Schreiber. You have James freaking Garner in this movie.
Oh, yeah, and Stockard Channing.
Stockard Channing. M. Emmett Walsh for like 42 seconds.
Yes, yes. But in a fantastic signature M. Emmett Walsh kind of role.
You have the dude from West Wing. Wasn't John Spencer?
Yep. Absolutely. There's also a, it's funny because I don't think, except for maybe in Dexter, I saw her. Well, I must have seen her in Dexter, but the parole officer, Margot Martindale, was in The Americans and The Good Wife and Justified.
Yeah, she was amazing. She was mucho. Even Giancarlo Esposito, who's great in everything. He was in The Usual Suspects and he was a tremendous character on Breaking Bad.
Yeah, everybody in the movie, pretty much without exception, I think, you just feel comfortable in their hands. Like when you see, I mean, again, it's the Afghan thing. When I see Gene Hackman, I'm immediately engaged in whatever movie he's in. Because if nothing else, you know, yes, he's going to be doing well.
Same with Paul Newman and Susan Sarandon.
Yes, exactly. And Stockard Channing and James Garner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And he was a surprise to me. I had totally forgotten he was in this movie.
Oh, me too. Yeah. And you just wondered if he, you know, again, like M.M. Walsh, you just think, well, maybe these people are just kind of float in and out. But no, it turns out some of this is important.
Wait, was this the first time you'd seen this movie?
Nope. I think I saw it in the theater.
Oh, yeah. Because I was really surprised when I put it on the list and you categorized it as obscure.
You don't think it's obscure?
It wasn't for me, so I don't really have that perspective. I always thought about it when every time the new Twilight movies came out. It always made me think, nope, that's not Twilight.
There's the author's name is William Gay, maybe. He did a horror book called Twilight that had nothing to do with either this or the Sparkly Vampire movie. So that's what I think about when I think of the sparkly vampire movie.
But we were talking about the cast, and I actually did, this is almost unheard of, I actually did some research.
Oh, did you take notes?
Well, I memorialized the results of my research. Was it, if you want to call those notes?
Was it some sort of spreadsheet?
Indeed it was.
Excellent.
But I looked up how many awards this cast received.
Oh, that's an interesting thing. It must be a million.
Well, I had to limit it to just the EGOT awards, because if you started roping in like all the Screen Actors Guilds and all the Critics Awards, yeah, it would have been in the hundreds. We're actually over 100, I think, if you count the nominations. But this cast has 5 Oscars and 1 honorary Oscar, and 24 Oscar nominations. It's got 7 Emmy wins and 44 nominations. It's got 12 Golden Globe wins and 2 honorary Golden Globes, and that's out of 54 Golden Globe nominations. And it even has 2 Tony wins, one of them by Liev Schreiber and the other by Stockard Channing.
Wow.
With 11 Tony nominations.
Wow.
The only one of the folks that we mentioned that had 0 nominations in any of those categories was Mr. M. Emmett Walsh.
Yeah, he seems to be a character actor's character actor.
Indeed.
This is chock full of goodness. And again, this is a movie that puts you at ease. So, like I said, I thought the pacing was pretty good, even though there's not a lot of action. Because I trusted all the characters to be leading you in some direction.
Yeah, and just because of the baggage, in a good way, the baggage that these actors bring to the role, everything they say has gravity. And if these were unknowns, I don't think it would have been like that. And I think it would have maybe felt a little bit more opaque or obtuse trying to navigate, because you might be thinking, you know, what's important and what's not. But in this movie, everything is important because of who's saying it. And with that being said, the writing was actually pretty tight. There wasn't a lot of wasted banter.
No, not at all. And there's some fun stuff. You know, there's still fun character things that make it pleasant. So I guess we should address the plot, at least. I definitely recommend people watch it. This is all about an aging private detective, Harry Ross, Paul Newman, he's an ex-cop, and we open with him on a case to return a 17-year-old Mel Ames, played by Reese Witherspoon, to her home. And he has tracked down Mel and her sleazy boyfriend, Jeff Willis, Liev Schreiber, in Mexico. And he is going to take Mel home, and he ends up having a little confrontation with Jeff at the poolside. And during a kind of struggle, Mel ends up picking up Harry's gun and accidentally shooting him with it. sort of a ricochet into the upper thigh, which actually becomes something of a running joke, which I thought was really well handled.
Indeed, literally at the end of the movie.
Yes. And then it flashes forward.
Like two years later.
Yeah, 2 years later. It flashes forward, and he is giving kind of a deposition at a police station. And I thought at first, again, of course, he's giving a deposition about kind of what happened in Mexico, but he's not. He's giving a deposition about what is happening and we're going to be watching in the next hour and a half. And that's when we find out that he is actually living at the Ames house. And Mel's parents are Jack and Catherine Ames, Gene Hackman and Susan Sarandon. And they're film industry bigwigs. And they're also, everybody's in the twilight of their careers. In some cases of their lives, because it turns out Jack has cancer.
Yeah, and you said they're Hollywood bigwigs, but they're sort of aging actors.
Yeah.
Seems like they don't work anymore, but are, you know, who you would think of as being Hollywood royalty. Sort of like Gene Hackman and Susan Sarandon if they stopped working.
Exactly. Well, and I guess Gene Hackman kind of has.
Yeah, he has.
But, yeah, and yet he's, turns out they are also running out of money. So Jack and Harry play cards, and Jack asks Harry to deliver a package, even though Harry's not a private detective anymore, but he'll do it as a favor. And it ends up being the beginning of a series of twists and turns that involve the disappearance of Catherine's ex-husband 20 years ago.
That's very, very succinctly put.
Yeah, that's from Wikipedia. Wikipedia, sometimes succinctly put. And I mean, we can go on the twists and turns. I mean, when Harry arrives to deliver the package, he encounters M.M.L. Walsh, who has been shot and is shooting back at Harry.
Well, shooting at Harry. Harry doesn't have a gun.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Harry doesn't carry a gun anymore. So, yeah, so he's shooting at Harry, and Harry avoids getting shot, but that's about all, because he's detained by the police, and that's where we find out that his former colleague, Lieutenant Verna Hollander, played by Stockard Channing.
Well, Harry, after he gets shot at the place where he's supposed to deliver the package for Ames, he goes right back into private detective mode, because he's... It's unclear exactly why, but he's pretty loyal to the Ames, even though they don't pay him and haven't paid him even for his work in Mexico. But he is living at their house. It seems like he does odd jobs for them and has not been doing detective work for at least a year. He let his license lapse. But as soon as he has this encounter with the guy shooting at him and dying in front of him, he goes full on detective. And actually goes to the guy's apartment. And that's where he's arrested by the cops.
Yes, because the guy that was shooting at him is a former cop himself. And also a private detective. And that's when we go down to the police station to meet Lieutenant Verna, who's Stockard Channing. And then the captain, who is Captain Westwing. And that's when we hear sort of the... Again, I have to contrast this a little bit with The Last Boy Scout, because the chit-chat among the police at the police station actually was very smoothly handled in this.
It was, and it explained. It showed us first that everybody was treating Harry with, like, these kid gloves, and but not in the way of, like, reverence. Not like a star cop coming back to the precinct. It was more like pity.
Yeah, or even like professional courtesy. You're right. It's all about pity.
Right. Yeah. And then we find out that it's because they think that when he got shot in Mexico, they shot off his manhood.
Shot it clean off. So yeah. So, and again, I mean, we're talking about, this is, you know, we didn't know that Harry is past his prime, and people are cheating him, not only like he passes his rent, but yeah, that he got his pecker shot off. So it's just kind of another indignity to this character. But he still is on his game. So later, Harry and Catherine end up going to bed.
Well, before that, he's kind of bailed out of the precinct by none other than James Garner, who's an old family friend of the Ames.
Yes.
And he was a treat to see on screen.
Oh, yeah.
And the chemistry that he had with Paul Newman was fantastic. It was great just to watch them in that little like 2-minute scene of them sitting on the bench, just having some small talk.
Yeah, again, much like The Last Boy Scout. Yeah, but James Garner maybe it's because we grew up watching The Rockford Files. But yeah, he's just another one of those movie stars that you trust. Like, who would be the contemporary, like the modern James Garner?
Someone who had movie star chops and then ended up falling into a beloved TV role?
Yeah, maybe. Would it be like a Timothy Oliphant or a even, what is his name?
What's he been in? Maybe I can help.
No, well, he played W.
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin, yes. Is Josh Brolin the modern day James Garner? I don't know, because James Garner was a pretty big deal, because he was Maverick before he was Rockford.
Yeah, I don't know. James Garner is pretty one of a kind.
He is. He is pretty. Yeah, absolutely. Tip of the hat, Mr. James Garner. Plus,
indeed.
Okay, I'm just gonna do it. I mean, he had an incredibly long career because he was revered as an old guy just as much as he was popular as a young guy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I never watched the Rockford Files. Like, they're kind of on a lot, but it's just something I never really caught on to. I think I was just slightly too young for it. But that's one of those shows that I always wanted to go back and revisit.
It's one of those like shows that he was sort of like the anti-hero, not really anti-hero, but he was like the gritty private detective instead of he was the anti-James Bond kind of.
Yeah, I actually remember having a conversation with you when I was little about it. And one of the reasons you told me that you liked it was because, I forget the way you put it, but essentially it was, he was always getting beat up.
Yeah.
Because he knew trouble was coming, but he also knew sometimes he just had to take a beating.
Yeah. And he lived in a trailer. You know, he wasn't particularly successful in life. But yeah, I mean, okay. So he was, let's see. He starred in The Children's Hour. A star, maybe a strong word. The Children's Hour in 1961. But then he was on Maverick from 1957 to 1962 on TV. He was in The Great Escape in 1963. He played Philip Marlowe in 1969 and Support Your Local Sheriff in 1969. Support Your Local Gunfighter in 1971. The New Maverick, Young Maverick, a bunch of Maverick stuff. Then The Rockford Files, 1974 to 1980. And then he played Victor Victoria, The Glitter Dome, Murphy's Romance. He played Wyatt Earp in Sunset, Fire in the Sky.
Fire in the Sky?
yes, indeed. He was actually in the Mel Gibson Maverick also, as like a nod to that. And then, of course, now we get to 1996 where he's in My Fellow Americans and he's in Twilight in 1998. And then he is in Space Cowboys in 2000. Let's see. Oh, God, the Devil, and Bob. He plays God. He was in The Notebook.
Of course he would.
Of course, yeah. The Notebook. Oh, and he was in 45 episodes of 8 Simple Rules. Did he take over for John Ritter?
I don't know. I never saw an episode of that show.
Yeah, me either. But I know it had Kaley Cuoco and Katie Sagal. Who took over for... Maybe David Spade took over for John Ritter. And James Garner played the grandpa. I don't know. Anyway. So... Sorry, we could do a whole James Garner retrospective. James Garner, Paul Newman, Gene Hackman, Susan Sarandon. Look at National Treasures.
Yes, this would be a very long podcast if we just went through the filmographies of each of those of exactly. The lead.
Yeah, let's go to M.M. Walsh then, going by the middle names, of course.
No, I think we should go chronologically through all of their filmographies.
Ah, okay, excellent. there's something going on with this obviously Jack is paying blackmail to somebody. Turns out, of course, we see Reese Witherspoon again because she still lives in her parents' house, and Harry still lives in their house, so that's kind of a, must be a strange relationship.
He did mention to her later that he didn't like it when she shot him.
Yes, yes. and I think there's just enough of her being a little petulant, but not too much that it lends itself to, you know, to credibility.
Yeah, it's a pretty subdued performance from her. But yeah, I mean, she does well with what she's given to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I always like Liev Schreiber. He's not always in great movies, but I like his character here because he's just enough of a goofball that it's kind of played for laughs, sort of. But it never goes all the way into like campiness too much. I mean, it allows Paul Newman to be still kind of a formidable action hero, is the wrong word, but you know, a guy who can take care of himself against a young whippersnapper with a chicken bone.
Right.
I like Liev Schreiber playing kind of the whiny guy for some reason.
Yeah, no, he was good, but he was interesting because he was good, but he was sort of, every single scene he was in, he was outshined by whoever he was in it with.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, it started off with being, usurped by Reese Witherspoon because she's nude. And then later on, when he gets to the meaty part of his role, he's totally overshadowed by Margot Martindale playing Mucho. I mean, she was fantastic.
Oh yeah, she was great. She brought actually like real like pathos. So that, I think that was a good combination of Mucho and Jack. But then we have this the series of double crosses, because and I alluded to it before, but Catherine and Harry end up having like a little fling, one night stand sort of thing, at the same time that Jack has a heart attack, and Jack figures out because Catherine is wearing Harry's shirt when they run to his aid. But as it turns out, Jack has been kind of playing Harry too. Everybody has been manipulating everybody else.
Not really. Everybody's kind of been manipulating Harry.
Well, okay.
And he doesn't like it. He's really starting to get ticked off, and that's why, at least that was my interpretation, is why he kept pursuing this mystery.
That's true. Because he could have just let it all go, especially once he figures out kind of what happened.
Yeah, when things start pointing back to the Ames, and he's not really sure if it's Catherine or what was Gene Hackman's character's name?
Jack.
Yeah. He's not really sure if it's one of them or both of them, but when it starts pointing back to them, he could have just dropped it, but they weren't really telling him the truth, and they may have been putting him in danger knowingly, and that kind of ticked him off enough to keep looking into it.
Oh yeah. Then, you know, at the end, spoiler coming, when we find out that the one that really ended up killing Catherine's ex-husband was James Garner, and that's why he lives in a swanky house with a nice view. And again, I mean, he could have left that alone too, but he wasn't gonna. And then once James Garner figured out that Harry knew about it, then that was kind of all she wrote there. One of them wasn't going to make it out of that confrontation. But it all kind of had a sense of, I mean, kind of like a, I'm not going to be able to find the right words, I don't think, but kind of, you know, it was inevitable and nobody really wanted it to happen, but all these confrontations were going to take place.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It was, the movie was rather deliberately paced, but it had a momentum to it that felt unstoppable. So even if it was slow, you could just feel that it was still moving forward at a constant rate towards some conclusion.
Well, and even the final confrontation between the James Garner's character and Paul Newman, it seems like neither of them want it to end the way it's going to end, but neither of them can kind of leave it alone either.
And they both knew it was going to end that way.
Yeah.
I mean, Harry even warned him as he was trying to leave, and he knew that James Garner was going to probably try and kill him while he's leaving. He's like, "And I can see your reflection in the windows." But it still had to go down.
Yeah. And I mean, I actually like the line where James Garner responds, "Yeah, the things you don't think about when you buy a house."
They have such a great history that is never explored, but between the characters, but you can tell just by the way they talk to each other that they have inhabited each other's lives for quite some time.
Yeah. And then, you know, in a strange kind of turn at the end, Jack is going to die, but Harry's not going to ride off in the sunset with Catherine. Turns out Harry's going to ride off in the sunset with Stockard Channing after she determines that the rumors are incorrect.
Yes. He invites her to take some time off with him. And before she agrees to, she checks his pocket.
Which is kind of fun and endearing and sassy. And so it's all about mood, and it's all about actors that you trust and enjoy their company.
The movie feels small. It doesn't have an expansive footprint, but it's a joy to watch, you know, the collective history of all of this talent interplaying with amongst each other.
Yeah, it's the anti-Wild at Heart. It's all about kind of character development and getting to know people, where Wild at Heart was all about Crazy Fever Dream with kind of cartoon characters.
Yeah, I think I would have watched the version of this movie that is just Harry being the handyman for the Ames.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be it's a great kind of noir setting anyway. Did you ever read or listen to, I know I had it on tape at one point. I don't even know if it's available on Audible. Ethan Coen's short story collection. It's called Gates of Eden, I think.
Nope.
There's a really, it opens up with a very good short story that I know I've ruined for you, but it's John Goodman kind of doing a monologue about his friend Radio Ronnie. And that's just a great character piece. And I can see where that kind of short story could lead to a character in a bigger film. But another one was William H. Macy. It's this noir story where William H. Macy, instead of being kind of like your typical private detective with a snappy patter, he still has a snappy patter, but instead of being a private detective, he works for the California Office of Weights and Measures. And otherwise, it's just a straight noir tale. And William H. Macy is a great actor anyway, so he pulls it off. But yeah, it's just kind of a bunch of like absurdist sort of stories, but quite a bit of fun. And it's got all those Coen brother actor pals that show up reading the stories. So if you ever had a chance, it's freaking fantastic.
I'll put it on the list.
So, I mean, anything else about Twilight? It's just fun. I think it's a fun movie. Not fun quite like Heist was fun, but yeah, more like a fun to see all these actors in this one place.
Yeah, it's like a wind down movie. You know, it's a movie you want to watch when you want to kind of sit back and relax, not when you want to munch on a bunch of popcorn through several action scenes. It's like a good solid like late night streaming selection.
Yeah, like you've got the fire going and you're drinking scotch by yourself in your den.
Or bourbon.
whatever your favorite thing is. It doesn't matter. It could be Diet Pepsi.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And anyway, anything more on Twilight?
Nope. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was a little worried that you wouldn't, but because I hadn't actually remembered the plot when I recommended it. I just remembered really liking it. So, yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm just glad I got to see it again. Well, guys, that's the show. Send us feedback. We want feedback. Tell us where you've enjoyed it. Tell us you've hated it. Just something to acknowledge that you've been listening. Send it to show@notinacreepyway.com or come on Facebook and join the Not in a Creepy Way page or send us a tweet @not_creepy. Come on. We know you're listening. I know you are. Just prove it. Tell us where you're listening from. Anyway, whoever listens to end credits on podcasts anyway, you probably totally fast-forwarded by this now, or just deleted it. You've already swiped to delete from your phone, whatever, your device. I don't know how you listen to this. It's your business. We don't really pry. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show.